Dear Sugar is supported by
When I was 43 years old, my husband died suddenly. He was 44. We had a young child. And after 6 months of grieving process as a widow, I discovered that he had kept secrets from me, that he had been involved with a woman in my town who was the mother of my daughter's best friend, and also with other women as well. So the betrayal was on many levels.
That was Julie Metz, author of Perfection, a memoir of betrayal and renewal. Mm. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Cheryl.
We're going to be talking today about the secret lives of lovers.
Yes.
Not garden variety infidelity, which is painful enough, but right. Really the kind of worst case scenario when you find out your intimate partner is living a double life, essentially.
Right. I've been thinking about it because the letter that we're going to talk about is a big, complicated letter in which, you know, as Julie speaks to, a lover appears to be, by all indications, one thing and is suddenly revealed as something else. You know, we always are discovering new things about the people we're with a little bit at a time. But sometimes, in some instances, it's sudden and calamitous, mm-hmm. and it completely blindsides people.
Will you read us the letter?
I will. I will read you this letter.
It's a long one. As you would say, it's a bruiser.
We're cruising for a bruising. Here goes. Dear Sugars, about 6 months ago, I married the man I've been in love with for more than 7 years. I was so excited about our life together. Sometimes I had to pinch myself just to remind myself that my life was real, that things were really as good as they seemed. My partner was my teammate. He was open, honest, caring, affectionate, passionate, smart. I had a feeling of safety with him that I never felt with anyone else, and a deep connection despite our very different backgrounds. My husband grew up in Central America with an abusive, alcoholic biological father who died when he was young, an often absent teenage mother who was constantly working to provide for her children, and later, an American stepfather who was in the Air Force. He married my husband's mother and brought her and her children to the United States when my husband was 13. Once in the United States, my husband's family moved often because of his stepfather's job, while my husband struggled to acclimate himself with the culture and the language. In contrast, I grew up in a four-person, stable, middle-class family in Pennsylvania. My parents had been together since high school. I never moved while growing up until I left Pennsylvania to go to college. I have many lifelong friends that I've known since early childhood. My husband and I met each other right after completing college, and somehow, despite our strikingly different pasts, connected instantly and grew to realize that we viewed the world in very similar ways. My husband spoke openly and candidly with me about many of his childhood experiences, and I traveled with him to his birthplace to meet his relatives and see where he grew up. My husband and I had respect for one another and what I thought was a bond that could overcome pretty much anything, defy all odds. Then, recently, something changed, and Sugars, I was completely unprepared for it. About a month ago, over the course of 1 week, I found out terrible secrets about my husband that were, to me and to everyone that knows us, completely unfathomable. I learned these things over my husband's shoulder while he searched for nearby restaurants on the computer one night, and then later, through further searches I did on my own, I learned that my husband, 1, had a deactivated profile on a dating website throughout our relationship that he reactivated on and off to browse and message people, 2, that he was posting personal ads looking for people to, quote, get drinks with on Craigslist while traveling for his job, and 3, the real kicker, over the past 2 years while we got engaged, planned a wedding, and got married, he had hired prostitutes, also while traveling for work, and left nasty, degrading reviews about them online. But what followed was the worst part. It was a series of lies, lie after lie after lie after lie. Every time I found something new, my husband would only admit to that piece of information. Even still, today, after he's told me time and again that this is the whole truth, I can't be sure it's all of it because of all the lies. How do I tell you the rest of the story? The rest of the story is this pit that sits in my stomach every day while I try to get dressed for work or smile or interact with people. It is the knowledge that you believe you know someone, and then, somehow, suddenly, you don't. After only 6 months of marriage, I'm contemplating filing for divorce, but I am also in the process of trying somehow to understand. My husband claims that he never met anyone from the dating website or Craigslist and that he only sent occasional non-continuous messages. He admits to paying for sexual acts 4 times and says that someone he works with showed him how to do it. He makes his actions seem like part of a fantasy world, something that was mostly lived out online, and says that he pretended he was someone else while doing them. But at some point, Sugars, real people became part of this world, and it was no longer a fantasy. On top of the messaging and the actions, I am also extremely concerned about my husband's reviews of the women he met with. They indicate to me that he was somewhat entrenched in this community, willing and wanting to treat women like objects, share his escapades with others, and wait for their feedback. My husband says that he has demons from his childhood and that he's bad at being alone. He says he used to run and read and have healthy hobbies and routines in his life, something I know is true and have watched wane over time, but that this became his distraction instead. My husband wants to stay married and get better. He is seeing a therapist, and I've gone with him 3 times. Lately, he's turned back to healthier distractions in his life, running, doing yoga daily, and reading regularly. He is seeking out ways to travel less for work. But how do you recover from something like this? I listen to your podcasts on infidelity, but none of them seem to resonate with me. In each of those stories, there was some sort of reason that made sense, some sort of trigger for the infidelity. For me, that reason is missing. My husband was never abusive or demeaning towards me. We had a very healthy and explorative sex life, and I felt completely satisfied in my relationship with him. My husband loved and respected my body, but he also loved and respected my mind. We often had long intellectual debates about serious issues that were some of the best conversations I've had with anyone in my life. My husband says he was happy in our relationship, that our relationship was the thing in his life that made sense, that this other part of him is something darker that he wants to stop. How can one person be so contradictory? I'm questioning our entire relationship. I feel like our marriage was a fraud and that I was missing a key piece of the puzzle when I entered into it. When I talk to my husband, he seems to understand and regret what he did, but he also seems to disassociate from the behavior, acting like it could go away, like he could fix it, mend it, make it all better. I also worry about my own baggage. I have trust issues from previous relationships that I've struggled with, but those issues were something we worked through together, and over time I learned to trust my husband. Now, after this traumatic betrayal, I fear that it will take me years, even decades, to ever achieve that level of trust with him again. I am about to be 30 years old. I can't help but think that I can get out of this and have a fresh start, but I'm still struggling with the reality of it all. Sugars, how do I proceed? Signed, 2 Truths and Many Lies.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry for your situation, 2 Truths and Many Lies. This is a very, very painful situation. And there are so many parts of it that we need to dig into. But the first thing I want to say is how much strength and wisdom and calm I see in your letter.
Yeah.
In the midst of this terrible storm of lies, as you say, and confusion. And, you know, you don't know which way you should go when you think about going forward. But I think you're asking all the right questions.
Yeah.
And the first thing I want to say to you about this question at the heart of your letter, which you repeat several times, essentially returning to this question of why and how. How can it be that somebody I know so well has this other face, has this other life that I don't know about? Mm. And why won't he be honest with me about it? And what I can tell you about the why is because he's ashamed,
yeah,
really ashamed. And that's why you haven't seen his whole self, and now you have. And I understand your confusion about those two selves coming together. But in order for you to succeed in your marriage, in order for your husband to heal, he's going to have to bring those two selves together, and you're going to have to learn how to love those two selves. Now, that doesn't mean that your husband gets to continue to act out in these destructive ways sexually.
Right.
But it does mean that what you've seen is as true as all of that good stuff, mm-hmm. all of that loving stuff. Mm-hmm. And so that healing journey, if you decide to go on it together or if he decides to go on it as an individual, is about learning how to love the darkness that is this man you married. And in that darkness, there is deep shame. There is the capacity for profound deceit. Mm-hmm. There is the capacity to talk about women in ways that you find shocking and degrading and sick. And as you say, you're going to have to work for a long time to rebuild trust if you decide to do that.
Right. When I read this letter, I just kept thinking about this paradigm, you know, that I really thought about Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's this Scottish sort of gothic novel written by Robert Louis Stevenson back in the 1886. And interestingly, around the time that Freud is thinking about and writing about the idea of the subconscious, that there is our conscious experience of ourselves and the person we try to project in the world, and then there's this bubbling cauldron of unconscious, forbidden wishes and desires and impulses. And just to recap the plot, most people know, but Dr. Jekyll is this guy who wants to be respected and revered by his community, and he doesn't want to lose his social position, but he has all these unstated vices that he needs to indulge. And so he conceives of this potion, which he drinks, and that physically transforms him into this effectively a sociopath, Mr. Hyde, who can then indulge in all these sexual and violent fantasies that, in fact, Dr. Jekyll has. And just a quote to think about, with every day and from both sides of my intelligence, the moral and the intellectual, I thus drew steadily nearer to the truth that man is not truly one, but truly two. And, you know, I thought about this also in relation to this paradigm in popular culture. So many of the particularly male protagonists, not just in literature, but in our folklore and in our popular culture, adhere to this same paradigm. Who is Don Draper of Mad Men? He's mm-hmm. a double life. He's this libertine, almost sociopathic figure privately, and then he's trying to be a badass executive and good husband and father in his other life. Who is Walter White of Breaking Bad? Mm-hmm. He's trying to be a good family man on one side, and he's a sociopath on the outside. Who's Tony Soprano, for that matter? He's an anguished suburban parent and family man, and he's a murderous, sadistic mob boss. Maura Pfefferman from Transparent, right, has one life, trying to be a responsible, dutiful, heterosexual husband, and then has this secret life where she recognizes that she's a woman and has to sneak off and, you know, experience that outside of the experience that she has as a, you know, being the father, the patriarch of this complicated, neurotic family. Spider-Man, Superman, it's in all these paradigms there is this idea of the double life. And those are very exaggerated versions of a paradigm that I think we all live with.
I agree. I think that we all have that, and yet I think so often when we address letters on our show, what we're talking about is normal human behavior that has actually reached an extreme.
Right.
To me, when I read this letter, I'm thinking that it sounds to me like your husband has, you know, a behavioral addiction that's connected to this kind of shame-based sexual life that he's put deeply underground, that he acts out of a compulsion. We're not talking about somebody who, you know, falls into an affair with somebody else because they were in a situation or has a one-night stand and cheats and regrets it. We're talking about somebody who has repeatedly over a long period of time continued to engage in a behavior that he or she knows is destructive. And in this case, it's about sex.
Right.
And, you know, this is like a gambling addiction. It's got behavioral aspects, but it really is connected to some really deeply internal psychological stuff that needs to be addressed.
Right.
You know, I loved all of those examples that you gave, because I think the reason I think those characters you named in those TV shows, the reason that they're so compelling to us is A, they're like us. We all, almost all of us, see a sort of split identity. And they're also not like us. They've gone to the extreme.
Right.
And two truths and many lies, your husband has gone to that extreme, and that's why you're so shocked.
Right. The sexual stuff is symptomatic. The real problem is that he's a compulsive liar.
Yeah.
And the first big lie is to himself. This guy, you know him as this put-together guy who's compassionate and thoughtful, and that's who he's made himself into. But underneath that are a whole bunch of traumatic, complicated experiences that he hasn't resolved and worked through.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't connect to our infidelity episode because in that episode, there were reasons that were given. Well, he has those reasons. He really does. He's compartmentalized and hidden them from you, but he's the one who's holding those reasons. And he may not even understand himself why he's compelled to these things. He says, I just experience it as loneliness, but hasn't necessarily realized perhaps it's because my mother was completely absent and my father was dead. I need to feel connected and affirmed, or I need to degrade women. There's some darkness within him that's rooted deep in the past that actually is angry and needs to express anger and degradation that he feels within himself and put it on women. Mm-hmm. That stuff is real. You provide for him a safe space for him where he can be his best self. But when he goes off on the road, those ghosts reappear. And when you pick up on the fact that he's disassociating and that he's lying and lying and lying or telling you just as much as can be proven in a court of law, right? That's a bad sign.
It's a really bad sign because what it tells us is he's not yet ready to actually tell you the truth.
To bear all.
He's not willing and able to do that because he's terrified. He's going to lose you if he does. And so, I mean, I think that, you know, you can't control what your husband's going to do about his problem, okay? But what you do know is he has to do something or you can't stay with him.
Yeah.
Now, you know, if he does something, I mean, I think that one of the signs that he's changed is that you won't have that feeling anymore that he only tells you what you can prove in a court of law, right? I mean, that there will be this sense of transparency. And that what that will mean, sadly, is he's probably going to tell you some more things that will deeply upset and disturb you.
Right. We have this idea that, you know, confession is this sort of discrete experience. You know, somebody just sort of confesses and that's it, that's everything. But that's not how it is at all. In this case, like grieving, it's really incremental. Mm-hmm. I think his allowing you to look over his shoulder at his computer and see, that's a kind of unconscious confession. He knew that he was offering you a portal into this darkness unconsciously because he wanted to confess to it. The truth is when people have as painful and frightening a childhood as it sounds like your husband did, the act of being shamed and confronted actually brings them back to re-experiencing that. There's a part of him, and this is the part that I think is quite dangerous for both of you, that actually wants to experience this shame and gets a certain gratification because it puts him back in a familiar place, the place that he was for much of his childhood, where he felt either alone or at risk of being suddenly abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are incredibly tangled issues that he's either going to consent to go on this journey with you and share everything that he's been doing and try to understand why so he can stop doing those things. Or he's going to prove through his actions or his words, his deceits, what he tells you or refuses to tell you, that he can't do that. And both of them are difficult paths. In a sense, you've just seen something that neither of you wants to face. But unfortunately, until he consents to you guys sorting through all of this and trying to get to the bottom of it, you're not going to feel safe and secure with him.
Right. And, you know, I want us to talk more about the situation that Two Truths and Many Lies is in.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to, at this point, bring in Julie Metz, who we heard a bit from at the beginning of this show. I think that she can share a story that might be helpful and enlightening with Two Truths and Many Lies. Let's give her a call.
Hello.
Hi, Julie Metz.
Yes, hi.
Hi, it's Steve Allman. I'm here with Cheryl Strayed.
Hi, Julie. How are you?
Great. Thanks so much. I'm really thrilled to be part of your radio show.
Oh, thank you. Well, we're thrilled that you're on the show. I read your book, Perfection, several years ago, and I just was so riveted by it. And I thought you'd be the perfect person to talk to us about this letter we've been discussing.
Yeah, I've spent a lot of time with the letter. It was very moving, and I certainly felt for this writer because I've been there. So I hope I can be helpful.
Wow. So tell us your own story. How have you been there?
Well, it's in 2003. I was 43 years old and the mother of a young child. My husband was 44, and he died suddenly in the middle of the afternoon of what we now think was a pulmonary embolism. But the fact was that it happened so suddenly and it was so shocking. And I started to kind of put things back together. And then about 6 months after he died, I found out many secrets that he had been keeping, the people who had been sort of my small entourage. They had access to his computer, and emails came in, and they kind of kept it from me, I think, because they thought I was dealing with enough, which I was at the time.
Yeah.
But I did find out, and then came a whole reckoning, sort of looking back at my marriage, wondering, as this writer has spoken about, whether it was all a fraud, mm-hmm. whether any part of it was real, and then, of course, you know, what to do with the rest of your life.
So your friends, people who were essentially helping you in your grief and right after your husband died, what did they find?
What happened was that they needed access to his computer in order to invite people to the memorial service. And they found all the evidence there. And one of them was a young man I had become very close to. And he's the one who told me.
Mm.
I think he saw that I was still suffering in a way that I think he felt wasn't fair to me, in that I was still grieving for my husband. And I think he felt that it was time for me to know the rest of it. The worst of it was that he had been involved with a woman in my town who was the mother of my daughter's best friend. This woman was in our house every day, or I was in her house every day. And she'd been having an affair with my husband for at least 2, possibly 3 years.
Mm.
And what was sort of amazing was that nobody knew, even though it was a very small town that I was living in. The level of deception was very extreme. You know, they had really gone to a lot of trouble to keep it all hidden. Then in the aftermath of that, I also found out that there were a number of other women when he traveled for work.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had numerous relationships, some of them sort of more emotionally involved and some of them really very kind of casual. But all of it was intensely painful when I found out and, you know, really upended my life completely in every possible way.
And how long did it take you? Obviously, there's the grieving process. You're grieving your husband's death. What about this other kind of grieving? Grieving the idea that your husband had been faithful to you and had been true to your vows and so forth. What did you go through in coming to terms with his affairs?
Well, by the time this young man told me what had happened, oddly enough, I wasn't as surprised as you might think. And I think it's because I had been moving through this first 6 months of widowhood with a strange sense that grew more and more each day of sort of being unburdened. But of course, I didn't know at the time what I was being unburdened from. By that point, it wasn't so much the sex anymore, because I knew I would never understand exactly what happened. I would never be able to get to the bottom of that. It was the feeling of violation that I felt kind of crazy during the last years of my marriage. One person that I spoke to about it afterwards said, he gaslighted you.
Right.
For listeners who might not have watched the
Hitchcock, right.
Yeah. You know, that's sort of what happens. A wife is sort of being manipulated by her husband. And I realized at that time that that was the thing that hurt the most, was the feeling of having been sort of mentally messed with. I then did something that not all people do, but I felt I had to do it. I actually contacted all the women with very surprising results. In that the conversations I had with them really, I think, helped me understand who my husband had been and how this had happened. And some of it, I think, is very pertinent to the letter from Two Truths and Many Lies.
Can you talk about that? What parts of her letter? I mean, I guess I don't know where to begin. There's so much to talk about here. But
yeah.
What was revealed to you, and you share this with the letter writer, is that you thought you knew who your husband was, and then you found out he also was somebody else, more complicated, deeper.
Yeah. I think that what I discovered, and this was for me what I saw in this letter, there's a kind of person who have a disturbing ability to compartmentalize their lives.
Right.
I think, for example, that my husband, I believe he loved me. I think he loved what our life was about. He loved his daughter, for sure. And he didn't want to lose that. You know, he didn't want the marriage to end. So he put all the other things that he was doing, he kind of found boxes for those things. So I was in one box, you know, our family, the barbecues, the dinner parties, the friends that we had in our town, you know, that was one box. And then there were all these other boxes. And I think this woman's husband is another such person.
Right.
She actually writes that he would pretend to be a different person while he was doing those things. I have that feeling about my husband as well, that he may have almost been imagining himself like playing a different part, that he really transformed himself. When I came across his correspondence with these other women, I recognized him, but then I didn't. There were letters that he would write to these women that I thought, who is this person? This is somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
In your case, Julie, in a sense, it's, you know, you're discovering who your husband was ex post facto. As you read this letter, you know, the question that is right in front of this woman at all times is really, what do I do? And specifically, is it possible to move forward in trying to continue this marriage? Or are there such substantial trust issues that I need to get out of this marriage before I get any deeper in? Did you have thoughts about that? It's different from your circumstance, but as you say, at the center of it is a charismatic, charming, emotionally present man who's also disassociated and has this secret life.
Yeah, I recognized quite a lot. My husband was really a very, you know, outgoing, gregarious person. But I think that inside he had a lot of turmoil. And she writes actually very movingly and with great insight about his childhood growing up and that he'd grown up in kind of very difficult family circumstances. And there were some overlaps with the situation. I did notice in her letter that she's already thinking about ending the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say that, you know, from where I'm sitting, he seems to be sort of crisis managing it in the sense that he only will own up to what she already has found that he can no longer deny. I would say that there's unfortunately very good reason to believe that there's more that she doesn't know.
Right. I think so too.
And that you could spend a lot of time trying to excavate everything. But, you know, the question is, would it be better to move on and start over, start her life over with somebody else?
What do you think? What if, I mean, I know your husband died and you found out after he died, but let's say all of these things that were revealed to you, what if either you had found out while he was alive or your husband confessed them to you? What do you think you would have done? Have you thought about that, what you would have done if you'd found out in your marriage?
Yeah, I certainly have had lots of time to think about that. And it's always been a very present thought. Knowing who I was then, and this brings up the big, huge difference between where I was and in my situation and where this woman is, which I feel is very key. I had a small child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the time that he died, she was 6.5 years old.
Mm.
And I think I probably would have tried to keep it together for a while, because I would have been thinking to myself that it would be in the best interest of my child.
Yeah, one other thing that is really important for Two Truths to think about is, and this echoes back to a lot of what we talked about with Esther Perel, is, you know, the question is partly, what did these relationships mean to you? What was the meaning of these betrayals and these deceits? And the problem seems to be that the husband wants to minimize their meaning.
Yeah, I mean, he's been extraordinarily careless. I mean, he's risked at the least her physical health. I mean, you know, having sex with prostitutes, he's put her in, you know, in a state of mental confusion. And he's done all these things, as you point out, with a kind of detached way, without really fully, you know, sort of acknowledging the many levels on which he's deceived her. And to me, that suggests just a person who needs to do a lot of work personally before they can really be in a marriage, you know, in a long-term relationship. Life is complicated and no relationships are, you know, are perfect. I mean, everything is work. And, you know, the relationship I'm in now, we've had our rough times, but the only way we've gotten through it is just with open, honest reckoning and a willingness to do the work. You know, if you aren't going to put it all out there, you can't make it work.
You can't. And I think one thing that might be happening, Two Truths and Many Lies points out, like, how could he be doing this stuff as we're planning our wedding and getting engaged? All this. And my answer to that is, one piece of this might be that actually that kind of deepening of commitment and intimacy is actually what escalated his secret life.
Yes.
Yeah.
That might be one of the engines behind his sexual compulsions.
Right.
You know, it's funny, during these days when I had this letter to read, my daughter, who's actually a student at Reed College in classics, she's home for her winter break. And I decided to talk with her about this because I felt that at 19, she was closer in age to this woman than I am, and in a very different kind of life space. Interestingly, she did mention a very beautiful poem that, if there's time to read it, it's two lines from a Roman poet whose name is Catullus, who wrote very beautiful love poems. And one of the things that struck me about the poem was that it's really about the place maybe where she is now, where Two Truths is now, which is a state of so many conflicting feelings and emotions. And I feel like I really want to share with this writer how important it is to honor all those feelings, and that it's okay to be as confused as she probably is right now. And that the only way to really get through this time is first to let everything come out, like all those feelings, and then to start to sift through them and figure out what the path forward is.
Mm. Mm. Will you read us the poem?
I will, yeah. The translation is from the Latin. I hate and I love. Perhaps you are asking why I do that. I don't know, but I feel it happening, and I am racked.
Yeah, in a sense, that applies to both the husband and the wife here. You know, Cheryl, as you were suggesting, you know, this guy really engineered a great disaster for himself. As he is escalating his intimacy and commitment, the thing that ostensibly should cause him the most security, he's actually at the same time engineering a scenario where he's going to betray this person in such a way that it will be impossible for her to stay with him. So he's going to re-experience the abandonment. She frames this in her heroic narrative as these are the things they're going to defy, these different backgrounds. And it's very painful when you feel like you're constructing something heroic and against the odds to have to sort of admit, no, actually, certain differences, not just in temperament, but in people's self-destructiveness, sometimes will out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the most difficult thing to admit might be, I can't save this marriage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as Cheryl has suggested, all of us, it's not hers to save entirely. Mm-mm. She can exercise a certain kind of patience. But ultimately, that poem applies even more to this husband. He's the one who loves and hates.
Yeah. And I want to say, too, this husband is worthy of our sympathy. I think that he's engaged in a great and painful struggle.
Right.
So this isn't about a judgment. This is about, you know, two people who are in this marriage and struggling with an issue that is a disaster that the husband brought on. And I want to say to True Truths is that, you know, you're not responsible for his life, but you are responsible for your own. You know, maybe you will look into your husband's eyes and see that he's very sincere and he's going to really tackle this and you're willing to wait. And maybe you want to walk away tomorrow. And
or,
I think anything you do is the right thing to do.
Some, you know, position that's in the middle that essentially says, we need to separate until you have figured this out and you can come to me with something other than I'll fix it, I'll mend it. It was only this. It didn't mean anything.
Right.
Sometimes it's okay and appropriate and the best thing to do to not foreclose the possibility of some kind of healing, but also recognize that you can't be with this person right now until he figures out some basic stuff.
I think that's a wise course.
Yeah, that sounds, you know, very sensible. I mean, she owes it to herself to really think about what makes sense for her. And unlike the place where I was at 43 with the 6.5-year-old child, she can afford and deserves to think just about herself, like what would really make sense for her life. She can start over at 30. It sounds to me from the letter that she has a very clear idea of what she wanted from a relationship. And this kind of self-destructive behavior of his, a kind of unconscious wish to destroy, as you pointed out, Steve, the very things that would have offered him such a different life. That's just a part of human nature that exists, that is, the root of every tragedy.
Right. Right. They walk back into the ruins. The other thing that is lurking underneath is the question of, will I be able to trust again? And, the tough part of, so they take a break and maybe, they're able to work things out. But if they're not, there's this other anxiety that, Julie, I think you could speak to a little bit, which is, how do you then, find the next relationship and feel trusting? Because this is a woman who told us coming into this relationship, she struggled with trust issues in small ways. And one of the lurking anxieties is, now I'm never going to be able to trust. Have you thought about that? What have you done in the wake of all that you discovered about your late husband?
I think that's the work that she can do.
Right.
That's her work. And I had that issue as well. I mean, I felt so violated after everything I found out. I thought, how am I ever going to allow anybody into my life again? One thing, when I did meet the man that I'm involved with now, we've been together for about 12 years. One of the things he did say was, you're going to have to find a way to forgive your husband so that we can have a meaningful intimacy, because if you can't find a way to forgive him, you'll never be able to open your heart to something new. And I think that is a true thing. But one of the things I also feel is, it is possible to forgive somebody and still say to yourself, that person is not healthy for me.
Right.
You can have compassion for them. I have a lot of compassion for my departed husband at this point in my life. I'm way beyond the anger and the rage. We had moments of authentic intimacy that I keep with me. And I think that's something else that she needs to think about too, is you don't want to throw it all away.
Right.
There were genuine, real moments, and those are hers to keep. But I think that work of being able to trust somebody, I think it can be done. It will take work on her part. But I believe that she can, if she chooses, make a new life with a different person.
Mm. Well, Julie, thank you. You have been so interesting and insightful. And to our listeners, I want to say, go and get Julie's book, Perfection, and you can hear more of this story that she's shared with us today. And I just thank you for being on the show. You were really interesting.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. It was really a pleasure.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Well, that was great. Yeah. I think, Julie, I hope Two Truths feels a bit consoled and maybe received some clarifying thoughts from Julie, because she certainly helped me think about this letter in clearer terms.
The marriage was not a fraud. What's so maddening is we want it to be one thing or another, and then suddenly we find out it's both things. And, it's partly a tribute to how deeply your husband loves you, that he was able to, build a beautiful, supportive relationship with you. You could not have known, literally could not have known until he let you into that, that there was this darkness within. Also listening to this program will be people who are, to one extent or another, leading a secret life. And people who lead, because I have led a secret life in a much smaller way. And I recognize that even though the world regards it as awful and dark and a degradation and a betrayal, my experience of it, and probably this man's experience on a certain level, is quite different. And Robert Louis Stevenson in The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde speaks to this part of it as well. And this passage killed me. This is Dr. Jekyll himself turning into Mr. Hyde. The most racking pangs succeeded a grinding in the bones, deadly nausea, and a horror of the spirit that cannot be exceeded at the hour of birth or death. Then these agonies began swiftly to subside, and I came to myself as if out of a great sickness. There was something strange in my sensation, something indescribably sweet. I felt younger, lighter, happier in body. Within, I was conscious of a heady recklessness, a current of disordered sensual images running like a mill race in my fancy, a solution of the bonds of obligation, an unknown but innocent freedom of the soul. I knew myself at the first breath of this new life to be more wicked, tenfold more wicked, sold a slave to my original evil, and the thought in that moment braced and delighted me like wine. Obviously, this is not an advocacy for that as a life plan, but it is the acknowledgement that what this husband has done, we could cast aspersions on and judge, but it arises from some set of grief, some bonds of obligation that in the end he could not handle.
Yeah.
And the hope is that he will figure out a way to, rather than compartmentalize, admit to those abject feelings within the marriage or ultimately outside of it.
Yeah, that's why I really am sure that both sides of this man are this man.
Right.
I agree with you that we all have two faces, but I think that the more enlightened and evolved and mindful we are about our lives,
right,
the closer those two sides
That's
sit
right.
together. And I think that most people will tell you that the closer they can get to being their true selves, you know, showing their private self in their public face, the more authentic they feel in their own lives, the more connected they feel to other people.
Right. For two truths and many lies, you know, I feel confident having read this letter that she is doing the deep work that she can in trying to just apprehend the situation. I'm convinced by this letter that she will make the right judgment about what she needs to do next based on what she hears from him.
I agree. And we wish you luck to Truth.
Every kind.
Dear Sugar Radio is produced by WBUR in Boston. Our show is produced and edited by the fabulous Lisa Tobin. Please write to us. We'd love to hear from you. Send your letters to us at DearSugarRadio@gmail.com.